It's time for overtime.
Now that's a tourist attraction.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Turn, shoot, score! There he is! All hail the new king in town!
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to another beautiful edition of Overtime. It's not beautiful outside. 33, 35 degrees this morning. A little sprinkle of rain. We have officially arrived into some much-needed, well-deserved football weather. Positive way of looking at it. That's the weather that allowed the Minnesota Vikings with a kick off of the wire yesterday in London. Minnesota persevered through a lot to get to 3-2. And if the season ended today, your Minnesota Vikings, your, not mine, would be in the postseason as the seventh seed in the NFC. That is wild, and it was part of a wild week five of the National Football League, which included a smattering of fireable offenses. The Arizona Cardinals would like a word. The Miami Dolphins are awful, and a lot of other ugly, ugly, ugly football yesterday in a wild week five to recap. Fun college football weekend and an absolute classic that went the way of the Augustana Vikings in the Key to the City ball game, a 28-10 fourth quarter lead for USF on their home turf, and the Vikings never stopped, and they get 19 points to best the USF Cougars 29-28 in another thrilling Key to the City rivalry tilt. Full recap for your consumption at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. And we'll be talking with the Cougar side of things. Head football coach Jim Gligowski coming up here in about 20 minutes, in about 40. We'll recap the wild weekend in the National Football League. Week five is nearly over. We could have another big game on our way tonight. Jaguars and the Kansas City Chiefs from Duval County, Florida. Big game tonight. Jacksonville looking to prove they belong. Chiefs looking to immediately insert themselves right back to the top of the pecking order in the AFC. And no, that's not some crazy prediction. If the Chiefs win tonight, they're right back there with Buffalo and anyone else, because the Ravens are not who we thought they were, at least not yet. I'm not burying them by any means, but that was horrific. A terrible loss to a good team in Houston. But then you got the Chargers, who also lost their ball game. The Bengals should move on from Coach Zach Taylor in a hurry, find a new quarterback while they're at it in the interim time period before they get Joe Burrow back and hope to salvage his career someday. The AFC's wide open, as we just alluded to moments ago. The 3-2 Minnesota Vikings, who have gone through a lot in injuries, the main issue that they're dealing with. Minnesota 3-2 in the playoffs if it ended today as the seventh seed. It is a fun season so far in the National Football League. We whip around the NFL and preview Monday Night Football at 11:40. We'll also introduce you to our Jersey Mike's Sub Above Players of the Week. I got two players in mind. We'll hook them up with some Jersey Mike's on us at the end of hour number one. Hour two, headlines and highlights, Jackrabbit football talk. They came away with a come-from-behind win. They trailed by 10 points at the half in Youngstown against the Penguins. They get the job done and escape with a 35-30 win. Heck of a way to open up the MVF state slate this year. Jackrabbit talk with Coach Dan Jackson coming up at 12:30. On this day in sports history, Major League Baseball latest, and the good, the bad, and the ugly before we are done today. Let's dive right in to the NFL talk, and it starts in one place as we introduce you to the 3-2 Minnesota Vikings, 21-17 win over Cleveland. To be fair, Brown's pretty darn good. They got after Carson Wentz. That Quinshon Judkins, running back for Cleveland, is a problem. That dude runs ridiculously hard and proved to be one of the top rookies in the game at any position just yesterday morning. Dylan Gabriel certainly could have won the game, but didn't make any big mistakes. I was impressed with his performance yesterday. Minnesota, the better team in the end, 21-17. Carson Wentz cooking as best he can right now. We'll see about the status of J.J. McCarthy. A bye week for Minnesota. Out of the bye, game against Philly. Are the field conditions going to be good enough for J.J. McCarthy to go out there and practice in a limited capacity over the bye and then ramp his way up? We will see. That'll be a hot debate topic in the days and weeks to come. Minnesota 21, Cleveland 17, Vikings 3-2, Browns are 1-4, and the Denver Broncos get the job done. Finally knocked the Eagles off of their perch yesterday. Stephen A. saying, these Eagles don't look like a championship-winning team that we saw last year.
They don't resemble the team that won the Super Bowl. And we've got to look at them and see that for what it is and say, what the hell is going on here? You got a new offensive coordinator. Does this man know what he's doing? They're not intimidating anybody. They're not striking fear in anybody. People believe they can score on the Philadelphia Eagles. They believe they can wear them down. Obviously, you've got problems with your offensive line as well, which may contribute to you not running the football as much as you would like. But in the end, they should be better than what we're looking at. And the fact that they're not just leaves the NFC wide open to the Detroits, the Green Bays. You know, you got a few teams to look at. You know, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, it doesn't look good. It just doesn't look good at all.
Denver Broncos trailed that game by 15 points entering the fourth quarter, won the ball game 21-17. Excuse me, they trailed by 14 points, 17-3. Broncos dominate the fourth quarter and get the job done with an 18-0 margin in the fourth and final frame. Damian Woody saying the lack of offensive identity is a big issue in Philly.
You cannot lose something that you never had. The Philadelphia Eagles never had identity this year. They can't run the ball well. They can't sustain blocks up front. We've heard the constant chattering from the wide receivers about the passing game, lack of targets, the lack of what they're doing. Quite honestly, they're not doing anything well offensively. And listen, they're right. They are letting down their defense. Their defense is playing winning football. They're playing championship style of football. But there is no consistency whatsoever in any aspect of the Philadelphia Eagles offense.
I got to be honest with you guys. We do power rankings every single Tuesday here on the show. I have no idea where I'm going. I guess I'm going to crown the Detroit Lions as my top team. That might change overnight. No guarantees here on the show. But I don't feel good about Philly. I certainly don't feel great about Buffalo. The Chargers are charging right now. And I don't know who the best team in the NFL is. It might end up being, and don't throw anything at me, the Kansas City Chiefs. After all, we'll wait and see. But Denver, a big win in Philly against the Eagles. Eagles are 4-1. Broncos are now 3-2 and crawling their way out of a 1-2 hole to start the season. C.J. Stroud, let's apologize, authoring one of his best games of his career. Phenomenal. Yesterday, 4 touchdown passes in a 44-10 blowout of Baltimore. The Ravens are 1-4. Their big excuse, Lamar Jackson out. But what about the defense in Baltimore? Just like in Buffalo, it's not good. It's not championship caliber. It's nowhere close right now. And those are big deficiencies for two of the top teams in the AFC. 44-10, Texans 2-3, Ravens are 1-4. And then how about the hysteria, the mania in the desert yesterday, where the Arizona Cardinals were leading the Tennessee Titans, one of the worst teams in the NFL, some people's worst team in the league, 21-3. Then it became 21-6, an absolute sizzler of a ball game. Amari DiMarcado, who's filling in as the third string running back for the injured Trey Benson, who filled in for the injured James Conner. DiMarcado streak into the end zone. 10-5, touchdown. He let the ball go at the one. And the Titans get the football, march down, score a touchdown. Then they come back with the ball. Later on in the game, Cam Ward throws a bonehead, rookie-looking interception. And the Cardinal defender twirls around, hits the ground, lets the ball go, and it gets kicked around a bit and deflected back into their own end zone. That's right, the Titans hop on it and score a touchdown. And late in the game, late stages, Cam Ward does just enough to lead the team down for a game-winning field goal. The Titans snatching victory from the jaws of defeat in Arizona. Yuck. Here's Adam Schefter on DiMarcado's fumble. By the way, either of those plays, DiMarcado's fumble or the interception fumble that got deflected into their own end zone, if either of those doesn't happen yesterday, the Cardinals absolutely win that game. Here's Schefter on the first play.
If Amari DiMarcado goes into the end zone in the fourth quarter, it's 28-6 with 12 minutes and 42 seconds left in the game. Okay, against a team that hadn't won, they'd be down 22 on the road. DiMarcado comes to the sideline. There's been video out there of Gannon going over, and it looks like he is so angry that he doesn't know how to control himself. This is a week after A.D. Mitchell does the same thing for the Colts, and Rex, I've never ever coached an NFL team, but I'm going to imagine it was a teaching point, and it was mentioned to teams across the league this week that one play results in a turnover that leads to the game turning around. Not to mention the fact that the Cardinals then had that interception that they fumbled away where four guys are around. They had eight drives that finished with 0 points in the second half. They had a snap that hit Kyler Murray in the face that resulted in a fumble. Like, you couldn't make up ways to lose a game more than they lost this game.
And that's incredibly true there. Poignant words from Adam Schefter. And frankly, I get Jonathan Gannon has a right to go over to his player and chew him out. And it was an ugly video. But when you look at how it all compounded on the Cardinals yesterday, there's one person to blame. And it might not be all his fault, but at the end all be all, it's the coaching that matters the most. And I don't care if you're a peewee coach, a college coach, a high school coach, or into the NFL. I think the new method of coaching needs to be do your great celebration, but I want you to take the ball and run through the back of the end zone after you cross the plane and then do whatever the hell you want. But do not drop the football before you reach that back line and then let it rip, Tater Chip, and go to war with your great celebration for a touchdown. But that was really ugly. Back-to-back weeks in the NFL of players crossing the goal line, about to cross it, and so focused on the other things that they let the football go, and it cost the Cardinals a win in week number 5. Last night, before we get there, Tampa-Seattle, best uniform matchup I've seen in years in the National Football League. Throwback, creamsicle whites for Tampa, and the blue, the aqua blue, silver top, silver bottom, Seattle Seahawks. Tampa a little bit better, 4-1. Need to put some respect on their name this week. We will tomorrow with the power rankings. Baker Mayfield, my favorite quarterback to watch that's not on my favorite team. Baker gets the job done in Seattle, 38-35. Detroit over Cincy. No show, to be honest, for the Bengals. They made it look respectable on the scorecard, but anybody that watched that game, I can tell you, got a super box at home. I was watching that game locally, and I said, I got to get this super box fired up. I can't watch any more of this Bengals team. 37-24. Wasn't that close. Lions, one of, if not the best team in the league, 4-1 is their record. And last night, Sunday Night Football, we learned something, and that is that Drake May is a legit quarterback.
I seen a young quarterback take a step in the right direction. You know, they did a lot of comparisons during the week, and I feel like it was a hell of a comparison to be compared to Josh Allen. But as you come into your own, Drake May has to be Drake May, you know, and I was just so proud of him, you know, coming in here and leading the team. You know, being a young quarterback can be hard sometimes, and, you know, that's why you have a supporting cast. You know, running backs making plays, receivers making plays, and let them know that you got his back. So I was just super proud of him. You know, he has a good approach during the weekend. You know, attach yourself to the process and not the results.
And that was Stephon Diggs, who had himself quite the ball game last night. The Patriots have arrived, and they bang with Buffalo to the tune of a 23-20 win. Buffalo, to be fair, turned the football over 3 times, 2 times very early on. Here's Drake May, who did not have a touchdown pass last night, but he did just enough, made the plays where they were, and gave his team a big statement win on the road against the best team in the division.
You guys did it. You guys were able to come back and get it done. How big of a win was this for
you? Just give thanks to good Lord, man. That was fun. That was a tough one. It took everybody in that locker room, and the guys came out, and we battled. I didn't play the best in the first half. The defense helped us out, and we came back offensively and got some things going, and 2 minute drive to the end, just go down and win it. That's what you want.
That's Drake May again. Big win for him. Statement victory for the Patriots, 23-20 in Orchard Park. New England 3-2, Buffalo 4-1. Coach Sean McDermott, how do you respond as a team?
This is the NFL, right? It's hard every week. And, like I said, I told the team, I said, usually we do what they did. And so in doing so, we didn't play our game tonight, and that's frustrating. And, this is pivotal learning opportunity for us right here. So there were some other moments where I just feel like maybe we're too cute at times. And overall, we gotta look at some things and just be honest with ourselves and learn from it holistically here. Offense, defense, and special teams, it's never one player. It's never one side of the ball. I thought these special teams covered their explosive return game rather well. So that was a plus. But again, just overall, a more complimentary approach.
And that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. When it comes to the Patriots and Buffalo, Chris Canty issuing a stark warning to the Bills.
This is going to be the quarterback battle in the division for the foreseeable future between Josh Allen and Drake May. And I couldn't help but think to myself while watching that game, maybe, just maybe, the Buffalo Bills missed their window when they had division supremacy in the AFC East. Because if the Bills can't pull it off this year, if they can't win a title this year, then it's not going to be a fait accompli that they waltz to a division title in years moving forward because of how good Drake May is.
23-20, last night's final in Sunday Night Football. Monday night, Chiefs hit the Jags tonight, 7:15. Coverage on both ABC and ESPN. Kansas City favored on the road by 3.5 points. Let's talk about the New York Jets. As painful as it is, it's a winless team. Damian Woody says, an embarrassing one too.
I can't even put my name attached to that. That was an embarrassing performance by the Jets. I could easily get on Aaron Glenn. But I'm going to the players. Do you have any pride in that locker room? The performance that you guys put out there yesterday was absolutely atrocious. Again, 4 starters out on the offensive line. No CeeDee Lamb, and you got absolutely dominated at home. You have actually been looking worse since the Pittsburgh Steelers game in week 1. That is not the way to go if you're the New York Jets. Like, I'm ashamed. Like, you should damn well be ashamed of what you're putting out there on the field.
New York Jets, one of the worst teams in the league. I had a coworker come by and say, is Cincy the worst right now, or is there somebody else? Cleveland's not the worst. That team has a lot of things that need to be figured out still, but there is a few teams that come to mind. Miami is horrific. The Raiders are bad. The Saints are awful. A couple other teams rattling around in my mind about worst team in the NFL. But the Miami Dolphins have a decision to make in the weeks to come. Kalen Kaler saying, no doubt about it, Mike McDaniel could be out of the job midseason.
It's bad. I mean, you look at their stats from today's game, which it seems like it's a typo. I was looking at their rushing yards. 19 rushing yards as a team. That's their total. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, the Panthers, 239 rushing yards. And this is a coach who comes from the Shanahan system, supposed to be great at run game, right? That is what they are known for. And so I think it is likely that he is very firmly on the hot seat here. I'm going to be going to that game in Madrid in November, and by that point, I do feel like they're going to have an interim coach at that point in time.
And we'll wait and see. The Dolphins losing, blowing a big early lead to the Panthers of all teams in Charlotte yesterday, in Miami not looking good. College football quickly. How about Richard Lucero Jr.? He was filling in for Gunnar Hensley at quarterback for the Augustana Vikings. Hensley dinged up ahead of the game. Aggie comes from behind to beat USF 29-28 in the key to the city over the weekend. Full recap at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. USD got a win 49-24 at home against Murray State. LJ Phillips, 244 rushing yards and 4 scores. And South Dakota State trailed by 10 points on the road at Youngstown State on Saturday. They come from behind to win 35-30. Julius Loughridge, 176 rushing yards, and count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 rushing touchdowns for the Jackrabbits. They're 5-0. Other area finals, Nebraska over Michigan State, 38-27. Minnesota gets the brakes beaten out of them by Ohio State, 42-3. And then Iowa State suffers their first loss of the year at Cincinnati, 38-30. That's it for the scorecard for now. We'll do a deeper dive later on in the show, but we got to get our first break out of the way and welcome in USF Cougar head football coach Jim Gligowski. The team was 3-0. They're now 3-3 after very, very tough losses at the hands of some of the premier teams at the top right now in the standings of the NSIC. How does the team respond? What's ahead for USF Cougar football? Head coach Jim Gligowski joins us next on Overtime as we're just getting the week going on a Monday right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
We are off and running on this Monday, October 6th edition of Overtime. Another week gone by, another great year on the gridiron, and the key to the city wrote another chapter on Saturday, as thrilling and enthralling of a comeback as it was for the Augustana Vikings in the 29-28 win. There's two sides to every coin, so certainly a disappointing, heartbreaking loss for the USF Cougars, who fall to 3-3 on the season. Joining us now is head coach Jim Gligowski on the ESPN hotline. Coach, welcome back into the show. Always appreciate the time, win, loss, or draw that you give us. How you doing this week?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me back on.
It's always great to talk football with you, Coach. Sometimes things just don't go your way. You guys had a lot going your way early on in the game, and frankly, through the majority of the contest. You look at the stats, you look at the game flow. Felt like a victory, 28-10 at one point. You certainly were had a position to either further accentuate that lead in the beginning of the fourth quarter. What do you take away from the loss that feels like, in a lot of senses, it felt like your team was certainly capable of winning that game? What do you take away from that loss in a stunning one on Saturday?
Yeah, you know, absolutely capable, more than capable, I would say. And obviously for three quarters, I think we proved it. I think the lesson lies in you never know when that one play could change the momentum. We talked about it in the, you know, after the game on Sunday, that there's a lot of things that happen in the course of a game. It's never one play, and there was tons of opportunities for us to kind of close the door and walk off with a victory, but that's not how it shook out. And, you know, give them credit. They hung in there and they kept playing, and when maybe everything looked like it was stacked against them, first and goal on the 4-yard line, up 28-10 late in the third quarter, they found a way to get a stop. We were unable to get the ball in the end zone, and that kind of turned the momentum obviously on its heels. And then quite frankly, their ability to score quickly, and we didn't make them earn it over the course of the fourth quarter. I think they had maybe 3 or 4 scoring drives under 4 minutes total, and that's just too quick, you know. And so I just take away that tough lesson learned. It's certainly extremely disappointing. It's a big time game. What a great atmosphere, huge crowd, beautiful day, windy, but beautiful day. It turned into a 2-quarter game, really, with the win, and they took advantage of it in the fourth quarter. And, yeah, as a head coach, I take responsibility for some of that stuff, and you look back on it, and you always kind of, you know, you always sit there and say, I could have done this different and that different, but it is what it is. We have to move on, have to own it, earn it, and next year try to get it back. But, kudos to them. They got it for a year, and we've had 3 straight losses, and got to find a way to get a win. But that's not going to help us this week as we turn our attention to Southwest.
And certainly, Coach, you know as well as anybody, there's football can be described as an easy game. Take care of the ball, control the clock, run the ball, out-physical your opponent. Those things are easy, but the game within the game, the fourth downs, things of that nature, come into question. If you get them, you're a genius. If you don't, you face questions like these. What went into the fourth down calls that certainly turned the tide a bit on Saturday? Wasn't the only reason that it didn't go your way, but a couple fourth down calls, aggressive. If you get them, your fans will love you. If you don't, it might end up coming to bite you, and certainly that was the case Saturday.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's kind of similar to when, you know, there's a Hail Mary at the end of the game, and everybody talks about the Hail Mary versus the 140, 50-plus plays that led up to that, right? Mm-hmm. But, those are certainly spotlight plays, and you know, the first one we hit, 20-yard, we broke through and had a touchdown. That was the first fourth down, and then we had 3 more after that. And, you know, the one that probably most people look back on is the one at the end of the third quarter where we actually didn't get it on 3rd and 2, had a guy open, didn't convert, and then we go to kick the field goal, and they jump off sides. So that moved the ball to about, inside the 1-yard line. And I just felt like at that point we had a field goal blocked, and we had, obviously an offside. Nonetheless, it was blocked a second time. And I just felt like from that right angle, that's a tough angle from the 1-yard line to kick it in the uprights with the wind. So I just felt like, you know, at that point you score a touchdown, it's 35-10, and we're going to the fourth quarter, and you feel fantastic. And, you know, we talked all week long, quite frankly. I talked to our players about, we're going to chase success. We're not going to fear failure. And I was going to be aggressive, and that was the mindset. We were going to go win the game. We weren't going to leave it to chance. And if there was a big moment in the game, we were going to put it on our hands, and we did that. Unfortunately, you know, the last 3 times that we did it, they stopped us twice later on in the fourth quarter, and obviously that big stop at the end of the third quarter, that was certainly a big part of the game. But there was also a lot of other stuff that went along with that. You know, I already mentioned the defensive inability to make them earn the touchdowns in terms of too many big plays that allowed them to move the ball down the field quickly, and that proved to be the difference when time was a factor.
Certainly another big game in the Key to the City rivalry. As you move forward, Coach, you guys were 3-0, you're 3-3, 3 straight tough losses. This one obviously probably hurts the most based on game flow and the way you were playing mid-game. How do you respond? What's the message to the guys, and how important is the response this week for your team?
Well, the response is everything, right? It's the event, plus the response that you have. You know, there's been a lot of studies done on that stuff. It happened. How do you respond? And that creates the outcome moving forward. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that we take from it is we're 3-3. We've lost three straight games to teams that are combined 17-1. I think you're going to find today in the polls they're probably all three in the top 10 or so. So three quality football teams. We played an okay one quarter against Duluth. We played two really good quarters against Mankato. We played three against Augustana. We've got to figure out a way to play four consistent quarters of football. And when you do that, we did it the first 3 weeks, you come out on top. And when you don't, you find yourself, you know, searching for answers. But the answers aren't hard to find. You know, we've got to coach better. You know, we've got to execute better. And then at the end of the day, when opportunities are there, we got to make the most of them. And so, you know, nobody's hurting more than the coaches and players. Nobody wants to be 3-3, but that's not what we signed up for. We signed up to play 11 football games. And like I told our players all the time, I'll let you know in November how good of a team we are and where we had our deficiencies and what we did really well. And until that point, you got to go back to work and get better. That's all you can do in life or in football. And we're learning one of those tough lessons right now that if you don't take care of business, you let somebody back in the game and there's an opportunity to be disappointed. And so that's the message. It's really not anything, you know, seismic that's going to change the face of the earth. It's just a matter of paying attention to detail and going back to work and getting better.
And going back to work includes a road trip on the road at Southwest Minnesota State coming up on Saturday. That is a 5 o'clock start time on the road there in Marshall. Coach, let's talk about defense. I like to spotlight position groups or players, just defense as a whole. I know coming out of the game, you mentioned several times now about the execution late in the game and not being able to prolong the Augustana drives that they got points on. But as a whole, what have you seen from start of the season to six games in from your defensive unit in terms of growth?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we played a lot of guys, you know, and we're growing in a unit as far as the expectations. We got a couple guys back that were able to contribute a little bit on Saturday, so that helped. But I think moving forward, it's like anything else, you know, we've gotten better at the execution of some of the things, and I think some of the things that quite frankly, have hurt us the most have been some singular incidents. You know, on the flip side, we haven't seen a lot of 12, 15 play drives. It's just been crammed down our throat. It's been more, you know, a mental breakdown here or there, and I think our kids understand where that improvement has to come from, and those are things we're focused on. But overall, you know, effort and attention to detail and film study and all those things you have to do during the week, that has certainly gotten better. And I thought we had, honestly, one of our most complete performances for about three quarters on Saturday. Now, you know, you got to give credit to the fact, too, that they had some moving parts that were adjusted to with some injuries they had. But, you know, as far as that goes, I thought we played physical with a lot of energy, and I think that's been something that's always been a standard. Our kids have always played hard and give great effort. We just got to figure out a way to not let ourselves get beat in some key moments.
USF Cougar football, the topic of conversation right now. Head coach Jim Gligowski is our guest. Hour one of overtime on a Monday. You got Southwest Minnesota State on the road, coach. Saturday, a 5 o'clock start time. Going to be homecoming and alumni day there in Marshall. This is a team that seems pretty one-dimensional. Their leading rusher this year is 109 yards. They throw the football pretty well, 900 yards passing for the quarterback there in Marshall. What stands out about the Mustangs ahead of the matchup on Saturday?
Well, again, it sounds like a cliche, but we've got to be more focused with ourselves. You know, certainly we've got an opportunity to go play again on Saturday. We're on the road, 5 o'clock kickoff, so that has its own little unique challenges. But, you know, the biggest thing for us is we've got to make sure that we don't allow any explosive plays, and we got to convert in those critical situations on offense and then ultimately be solid in the kicking game. And I think those are things that the one thing you don't want to do is start changing up your focus and what you think is important as a program just because you've lost a couple games in a row. You got to stay the course, continue to work on those things, and as you get better at those things, you'll get better results.
And it's a big one coming up this weekend, 5 o'clock start time from Marshall. Lastly, coach, always keys to the game, keys to a win, which would be number 4 for your team here in 2025 on Saturday night.
Biggest thing is take care of the football, make sure we execute on third down, and don't give up any explosive plays. And if that happens, we put ourselves in pretty good shape.
1-4, the record for Southwest Minnesota State. For USF Cougar football, 3-3. They're in action Saturday, 5 o'clock out in Marshall. Follow along with that program at usfcougars.com. Coach, we'll talk to you in a week. Thanks, as always, for the time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Always great to talk football, even after a tough loss like that for the USF Cougars. 3-3 the record. I believe, just like Coach believes, that team's still very, very high quality through six games this year. They got the Southwest Minnesota State Mustangs on the road Saturday at 5. For tickets, more information, or for tickets to your next home game for the Cougars, usfcougars.com. Take the break. Recap a wild Week 5 in the NFL coming up next. Monday Night Football, Jags and Chiefs from Duval County, Florida. Preview that game as well. And we will meet your Jersey Mike sub above Players of the Week next on Overtime.
streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, October 6th edition of Overtime. If there were people complaining about how hot it was this weekend, you wake up this morning, it feels like fall, almost feels a little like winter. This morning, 34, 35 degrees, depending upon where you're located. We got the football weather we've been looking for here in the early part of the month of October. We'll get to the NFL here in a moment. Before we go there, we like to keep it pretty darn local for our Jersey Mike Sub Above Players of the Week this week, and that's where we'll stay, right here in Sioux Falls.
Jersey Mike's Sub Above Player of the Week. Passion, performance, and perfection. Who showed up and who showed out? Big-time players make big-time plays in the biggest games. So many players, so many games, but only one can be this week's Jersey Mike's Sub Above Player of the Week.
We're not going to stick to only one this week because we got too many people to celebrate for the Augustana football team, and the Vikings looked like they were down, looked like they were buried, but they were not out of the ball game on Saturday against USF at Bob Young Field. 28-10 was the score at the beginning of the fourth quarter, but the Vikings never quit, so much so that they've earned a pair of Jersey Mike's Player of the Week honors today, and we're going to start in one place that is certainly not surprising. They were without their quarterback on Saturday, Gunnar Hensley battling an injury, and they lean on Richard Lucero Jr., 17 of 28, 231 yards, took three sacks, threw two touchdowns against one interception, including an interception late in the fourth quarter. What would that do to a typical young quarterback? Not my day. It's fine. We tried. I'm going to pack it up. We gave it our best, and that was a pretty decent performance. He comes back instead and throws a game-winning touchdown pass with just a few seconds left on the clock to our other Jersey Mike Sub Above Player of the Week. That is Isaiah Huber. Huber was in studio preseason talking about Gunnar Hensley, talking about the ceiling of this offense, talking about how much fun he has playing for the Augustana Vikings, and he proved that on Saturday. 5 catches, 116, and a touchdown. Far cry from his biggest game of the year. Isaiah Huber and Richard Lucero Jr. are your Jersey Mike Sub Above Players of the Week for the Augustana football team. They are 6-0, top 10 team in D2. Very fired up to continue to feature this team throughout the season and the rival USF Cougars. Congratulations to a pair of Augustana Viking football players, the quarterback Richard Lucero Jr., first ever start. A big win in a rivalry game on the road, come from behind, couldn't write it better. And Isaiah Huber, 5 catches, 116, and a touchdown. Good enough for today's Jersey Mike Sub Above Players of the Week, brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Three great locations here in the 605. Let's dive right in to your NFL chatter, and we will start with the team that got the job done yesterday morning, Minnesota Vikings. But there was an ugly pre-game issue with Jordan Addison. Addison began Sunday on the Vikings sideline, benched for the first quarter as discipline for missing a walkthrough practice last week. He ended the game with a redemptive catch on each of the Vikings' final three offensive plays, capped by a 12-yard touchdown with 25 seconds to go that lifted Minnesota to a 4-point win over the Browns. Addison saying post-game, "I never want to let my teammates down. They're always there for me, so I'm going to make sure I'm always there for them. When they needed me, I was there." In the three quarters of play, Addison hauled in 5 catches for 41 yards. The touchdown allowed the Vikings to salvage a 10-day, two-country road trip with a 1-1 record after a 24-21 frustrating loss the week before in Dublin to the Steelers. Coach Kevin O'Connell revealed Addison missed one of the team's walkthrough practices at Hanbury Manor, the countryside estate located 90 minutes north of London, where the Vikings lived and worked last week. At that point, Addison wasn't certain how heavy the discipline would be, asked if he was worried he would be benched for the entire game. He said, "Hell yeah." Ultimately, O'Connell lifted the punishment to the start of the second quarter. O'Connell saying after the game, "Those types of things aren't in alignment with our standards. I wanted to make sure he was held accountable for that. But at the same time, he knows that I thought he handled it professionally. I love Jordan Addison. He's a guy I care about tremendously. He knows that every guy in the locker room has his back. And yes, Jordan Addison is not immune to making mistakes. We've seen a couple off-the-field incidents with Addison Young in his career. This one different than those, but also kind of a boneheaded maneuver here, missing a walkthrough practice. Good to see the Vikings stick to their guns. Good to see Addison respond the way he did. Let's move on, and hopefully Addison continues to mature. Quarterback Drake May's maturation is reaching a boiling point. He delivered his signature NFL win with a clutch play down the stretch, and wide receiver Stephon Diggs isn't old. He isn't washed up, and he is a great teammate so far in Foxborough. He was sensational in an emotional return to Western New York, and May led a final drive to set up Andy Borogalis' 52-yard field goal with 15 seconds to go, a march that started with May somehow finding Diggs for a ho-hum 12-yard catch-and-run play, all while defensive lineman Daquan Jones had the quarterback in his grasp and was bringing him to the ground. You'll never see a cooler play than that. At a quarterback position, May was getting dragged down to the turf, had a full-on stiff arm with his left arm at the helmet of Jones, and wound up his right arm and gunned it over to Stephon Diggs. But the craziest part is that was nowhere close to the best play that May made last night. He is an ascending player, did not put up the big stats, didn't have one touchdown pass, didn't have two, didn't have three or four. He didn't throw a touchdown pass last night, but he didn't need to. The Patriots culture has changed, and yes, we were sick and tired and done with the Patriots. Let them rot in obscurity for decades after what they did to every other football fan base for the better part of 20 years. We were done with Brady. We were done with Belichick, and now we got Vrabel and May to talk about and deal with moving forward. And as Canty said in the clip we played hour number one, times are a-changing, and this might be the final chance the Bills have an opportunity to win this division in a runaway, get to the postseason, and hopefully go and win it all for Buffalo's sake before New England comes calling for that division very, very soon, because Drake May is legit. He's focused. He's poised. He's savvy. He's a veteran player already. Somehow doesn't make mistakes and has led his team to a 3-2 start to the year. Patriots are back, and yes, like I said in the offseason, all offseason long, great hire. This team is good. They attacked free agency with a vengeance. They drafted the right way. They went boring, ho-hum, yucky offensive line in the first round with Will Campbell paying dividends, and the Patriots have flipped the switch back on that Patriot way and are ready to rumble possibly into the postseason in the AFC here in 2025. The Cincinnati Bengals are not going to the playoffs this year, and they might not have a head coach for much longer. Bengals coach Zach Taylor sounded open to the possibility of a quarterback change after Jake Browning struggled again in a 37-24 loss to the Lions on Sunday. You say that's not lopsided. 13 points. Let's be real. If you watched the game, you saw a lot of bad football from Cincy. You probably turned the TV off or turned the channel and watched anything other than the Bengals' loss to the Lions on Sunday. Taylor said he plans to evaluate why the offense struggled in the third straight defeat, Browning threw three interceptions before he led the Bengals to three touchdowns in the final quarter to trim the final margin. After a game like that, we're going to look at all personnel to make sure we're doing the right thing. You're not. Taylor, when asked if he believes in Browning moving forward, said, "I won't shy away from that because it's a very fair question about the number of turnovers we had." Browning, former Viking, 26 of 40, 251, three touchdowns, three picks, but all three touchdowns and 133 of those yards came in garbage time after since he was walloped early for the third consecutive week. We'll see about options for the Bengals. Bengals have three other quarterbacks, Brett Rypien, former Viking, Mike White, and Sean Clifford, former Packer, on the practice squad. We'll see what Cincy's best option is. I don't think it's on the roster right now. Maybe you make a trade. Maybe you sign somebody. You bring Ryan Tannehill in. But I had this conversation with a coworker this morning as well. If the Bengals bring in anybody, or they trade for Kirk Cousins, or they trade for Malik Willis in Green Bay, or somebody out there, bring in Ryan Tannehill, and they still win 5-6 games when it's time for Burrow to come back, and he's going to be back in the game for week 14, week 15, week 16. I don't know if the Bengals are good at business if they let Burrow play if there's nothing to play for at all in Cincy. So yeah, this could be a big offseason of change moving forward for Cincinnati. Coach Zach Taylor certainly not immune to criticism, nor is the quarterback Jake Browning, who was functional in relief of Burrow a couple years ago with the wrist injury. This year, Not the case there in Cincinnati. What the Arizona Cardinals did yesterday was beyond baffling. Quarterback Kyler Murray has lost 48 games in his 7-year career, but Sunday's loss may have stung the most, and not because it was the most recent. I don't really know what to think about that. Murray said postgame, I don't even know. I really don't even know. That's how to lose a game 101. I don't know. It was crazy. Don't think he could say he doesn't know any more than he did there. Arizona gave up a 21-3 lead to the worst football team to become the worst team in football to become the first franchise since the 1970 NFL-AFL merger to lose three straight games on game-winning field goals. Murray said he's never quite felt like he did after this loss. This might be number one. Going on to say, that was bad. That was bad. Bad all around. It was B-A-D. Bad. The Cardinals had two big plays that'll come to mind on Sunday that made all the difference. If either one of them doesn't happen and they just do the right thing, they win the game. No doubt about it. You can have one bonehead play that is so catastrophic that people will talk about it for weeks and people will never forget what happened with Amari DiMercato yesterday. Wide open run to the end zone. Lets the football go before he crosses the goal line. And then later in the game, crucial moments, the Cardinal defense, which is pretty darn good, intercepts Cam Ward's errant pass, and all by themselves, organically, fall to the ground, lose the ball, and then there's two or three or four or five red jerseys there, black jerseys, whatever they were wearing yesterday was ugly in the defeat. They all fight over the football amongst themselves, and it ricochets into their own end zone. The Titans recover, score a touchdown, and then the rest is history because Tennessee got the ball back and did what they needed to do to win the game with a game-winning field goal. Very ugly. Ugly loss last night for the Cardinals. And as I said in hour number one, you can look at DiMercato. You can look at the defensive back with the interception. The end all be all, it comes down to the head man in charge, the head coach, and the execution and the coaching staff to get these guys ready and how to respond. We'll see if the Cardinals can do that. A laughable, horrifically bad defeat. And that might be a season-changing loss for the Arizona Cardinals. Might be the same for the Baltimore Ravens. I had too much faith. They say, ye of little faith. I had too much faith in Baltimore and the program that they had there in terms of Burt's Bank on Friday. I said, don't worry about it. Cooper Rush is functional. The Ravens got it figured out. They'll lock down the Texans. They've been underachieving this year. But I was very wrong. Ravens coach John Harbaugh said he's sticking with his defense coordinator, Zach Orr, following Sunday's 44-10 loss to the Houston Texans at home. The latest defensive meltdown in a season that continues to spiral for Baltimore. Harbaugh saying when asked about a potential move at defensive coordinator, I don't think that's the answer. We have to go to work is what we need to do. We need to stick together. We need to find ourselves. And that has to do with coaches and players working together. Ravens are 1-4 for just the second time in the franchise's 30-year history because they couldn't stop quarterback C.J. Stroud and the Texans' offense. The 44 points are the most allowed by the Ravens in a home game in any of Harbaugh's 18 seasons as coach. And it was a low point for the Baltimore defense, which allowed five touchdowns to a Texans team that had scored only six touchdowns on the year. We got to get our bleep together, outside linebacker Kyle Van Noy said. Just to be brutally honest, coaches can give us the plays, but we have to execute. It doesn't matter who you are in there. Do your job. If the coaches ask you to do something, do it. Myself included. Baltimore, 1-4. Sky is falling. This is bad. But if Lamar comes back sooner than later, I don't know about the hamstring. We don't know about severity. It was severe enough for him to sit out a game, which means I think it's pretty severe. You know, Lamar Jackson, that dude has played through a lot. But for the Ravens to be 1-4, how many teams right now, and it might sound like a fool, and I'm happy to keep the audio if it ends up being wrong, how many teams right now in the AFC are without a doubt better than Baltimore come December and January? I'm not so sure. They're 1-4. It's bad. If they sneak into the playoffs, look out, because that program is tried and true. The defense is the big question mark in Baltimore for years and years and years and years. You had defense in Baltimore synonymous with, that's the reason they win. They can run the ball. Joe Flacco, yeah, I mean, he's not great, but you know, that defense, you gotta get past that defense and you're not gonna be able to win against the Ravens and the defense they put out there on Sundays. But that's not your daddy's Ravens defense anymore right now. But I will say this again, 1-4, catastrophic start. They finished the year 10-7, 9-8, getting to the playoffs. I think they're better than Pittsburgh. I think they're better or could bang with the Chargers. the Patriots, the Bengals if they find a way to make it interesting, the Chiefs would be an interesting game, the Colts would be an interesting game, Broncos on that list, the Bills are better than the Ravens right now. But when they collided in week one, it was an ugly game on both sides defensively. So no, I'm not burying Baltimore, but yes, it is very, very ugly right now in Baltimore. Lastly here, Jaden Daniels came back and did exactly what you hoped he would if you're a Commanders fan, got the return they wanted, and so too did Jaden Daniels. Daniels playing for the first time in 2 weeks, reminded everyone the danger he provides to the Washington offense, threw for 231 yards and a score while rushing for another 39 in a Commanders lopsided win 27-10. Craziest part in that game, Chargers led that game 10-0. 27-10, the final score. Chargers go down, and yes, there's a little bit of imposter alert right now for the Chargers, and DC is the team that nobody's talking about because of the injuries and their sluggish start to the year. They're now 3-2, and I think they are also one of those teams we need to insert into that conversation. Philly gets knocked down off the perch, if you will. So you got Philly, you got Detroit. To me, those are the two best. Green Bay, an enigma. After the last 2 weeks, DC is good. Rams are good. Niners, apparently, really good, at least to be considered right now. Buccaneers, not talked about enough. I like Seattle quite a bit, even though they lost. And certainly, there's other teams in the mix, including the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC. It's wide open right now, and it is a ton of fun in the NFL. That ton of fun continues tonight. Monday Night Football, Chiefs and Jags, 7:15 on ABC and ESPN from Jacksonville. Kansas City, 3.5-point favorites. And I will say, might be ho-hum and boring here, but I do expect the Chiefs to win that game. Veteran team figuring it out. And one guy that I got my eye on more than anyone else is the rookie running back for Kansas City. You don't know him yet, but you probably will sometime soon. Breshard Smith. He's not a traditional running back. He's not going to gash you up the middle between the tackles, but he's a do-it-all pass catcher out of the backfield. Leaner build, leaner body, but he could be a big part of that offense tonight and moving forward, coming off a career best performance last week. Only four games in, two said career, but Breshard Smith, the name to know tonight for Monday Night Football, 7:15 on ABC and ESPN. Take the break. Come back. Hour two. Headlines and highlights. Jackrabbit Football Talk. Head coach Dan Jackson has his team out to a 5-0 start and a come-from-behind road win against Youngstown State over the weekend. Major League Baseball Talk on this day in sports history and the good, the bad, and the ugly all packed into an entertaining hour number two that's coming up next on Overtime.